Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the EarthGas Quarterly Report Conference Call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Chris Hoschen. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Patrick. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Chris Hoschen. I'm Executive Vice President and General Counsel at EarthGas. I want to thank everyone for taking the time to join us on the call today. With me from EarthGas are our CEO, Wade Larson, our CFO, Ethan Ackley, and our Executive Vice President of Finance and Strategy, Jeff Rath. So I'm going to start by reading our Safe Harbor Statement, and then I'm going to hand the meeting over to Wade. You're reminded that certain statements made in this conference call and our responses to various questions may constitute forward-looking statements within the meaning of securities laws. These forward-looking statements, such as statements about any financial outlook or guidance of EarthGas, rely on a number of assumptions concerning future events that are believed to be reasonable, but are subject to a number of risks, uncertainties, and other factors, many of which are outside the company's control, and which could cause the actual results, performance, or achievements of the company to be materially different. While the company believes that the assumptions concerning future events are reasonable, we caution that there are inherent difficulties in predicting certain important factors that could affect the future performance or results of the business. The company expressly disclaims any intention or obligation to revise or publicly update any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, except as may be required by applicable securities laws. During the course of this call, we may also refer to certain metrics, such as EBITDA, not recognized under IFRS. Non-IFRS measures do not have any standardized meanings under IFRS, and therefore are unlikely to be comparable to similar measures presented by other issuers. EarthGas believes that these measures may offer useful supplemental information, but they are subject to inherent uncertainties and limitations and rely on various assumptions by the company and should therefore not be relied upon for the purpose of making an investment decision. For a complete discussion of the risks and uncertainties and assumptions which may lead to actual financial results or performance being different from the actual from that contained in our forward-looking information, please refer to our news releases dated November 10, 2016, our most recently filed AIF, and our amended and restated base shelf prospectus dated May 15, 2015, all of which are available on our website or on our CEDAR profile. Wade, I'd like to hand the meeting over to you now.
Sure. Thank you, Chris. Good afternoon, everyone. We want to thank you for joining us, and we're really delighted that you have done so. In addition to delivering another solid quarter, one that really is our best ever from our core business, Issa will go into a lot more financial details shortly, but before he does that, I want to give you just a quick update on some of the key initiatives that we're working on, including Earth Daily and Optisar, and then give you a little bit of context as well on the write-down we've taken on the ISS cameras. First, in Earth Observation, you're starting to see now in this quarter the ramp-up in revenues from that business really developing quite nicely, and we're really pleased about the way that's taking shape and the fact that that allows us to firmly maintain guidance for 2016. We have been as well developing a kind of virtual constellation with our other partners in the Pangaea Alliance, and we have been offering that now, bidding that into more and more opportunities around the world, and it's really quite a unique offering. There's more information on that in our website, but we're starting to see that really begin to track financially as well, which we're very happy about. The sales ramp on Deimos 2 this quarter has largely been in Europe, Latin America, and Asia, and that is a reflection. It's taken longer than we would have liked, but it is a reflection now that the consolidation of the sales forces, the market footprints, the distribution channels for the two companies is really starting to click. And one of the things we're seeing there is that the service offering, particularly the very rapid delivery of data from you know, acquisition to processing to end customer, is one of the things that's really the differentiators in our customer engagements. Deimos 1 sales are still growing, continuing with legacy customers, and there's been this has really been in spite of the fact that there are more and more, you know, free data sources, Sentinel, et cetera, that are coming in this class. That hasn't impacted Deimos 1 data sales. And as you know, this past summer, we started streaming Deimos 1 onto the platform for a monthly cloud-free, continuous, image layer of the continental United States. Earth Daily has been an area of really active engagement for us in the last little while, and we are now actively in contract negotiations with multiple parties to bring this constellation to market. This has been designed to be very specific as the world's first Earth observation constellation planned from the ground up to truly power machine learning and artificial intelligence ready geoanalytics applications on a global scale. And so we're very, very pleased with the way that that is taking place. In parallel with those customer discussions, we are working with our partners on the really finalizing the design, the contract plans, the build phase, the insurance, and the financing of that system. On Optisar, very pleased to tell you, as you know from our previous disclosure, that we did have three MOUs, signed MOUs with international partners, representing in total $490 million US. And I'm pleased to tell you that we are now actively in full contract negotiations with all three of those partners. And the point I want to really emphasize there is that if we are successful in converting those MOUs into full signed contracts, that that $490 million represents about enough money to build the first orbital plane of satellites. So that would be a very, very significant thing. On Optisar, and indeed and specifically on the SAR-XL technology, which really forms the kind of IP backbone of Optisar, we're seeing increasing financial support and user interest from the Government of Canada. There's some engagements there that we feel very, very positive about relative to the government's own future imaging requirements. In the summer, you may recall, in August, we put out a request for a proposal, we almost called colloquially a reverse RFP, to prospective U.S. companies that might want to partner with us in a long-term kind of strategic partnership relative to the U.S. government market. And those bids are now in. We have completed our review of the bids received, and we are now in the mode of inviting the down-selected companies to really engage in the partnership negotiations related to making that happen. And then finally, as you will have seen in our press release, we have taken a $7.8 million asset impairment charge against the carrying value of our ISS cameras. And I wanted to say a couple of things on that just to, before we get into the Q&A. First off, that is a non-cash item. Very clearly. Secondly, relative to the size of the company and in particular Deimos Imaging's strength and the book value and the other businesses and going, it's a small amount. We feel that it's not particularly that big of a deal, to be candid. We did, thirdly, get a letter from our partners, which in essence, put us on notice that they would be wanting to negotiate with us on this program, renegotiate the terms of the partnership operationally, starting really beginning of next year, and that's what's served as the trigger. And I think you know the context of this, that there's been some geopolitical challenges that have influenced this relationship, and candidly, as we even hinted at the last quarterly call, that has impacted our ability to task these cameras operationally. And I think we all know that we've sort of seen this this coming in some way, shape, or form. Fourth, it is nevertheless still in our product offering, and it's worth repeating. The cameras still work. In fact, we have been selling a little bit of HRC videos this past quarter in spite of some of the operational challenges. And fifth, I just want to say, we felt at this moment as, financially conservative managers and in partnership with our auditors that this was the right time to take a partial write-down and to, really try to recognize what the fair value of that asset is today, given the outlook and given these issues with our partners. So let me hand it over to Isa and he'll give us a bit more thoughts on the financial numbers.
Great. Thanks, Wade. I'm pleased to be able to speak to another good quarter here that showed strong growth in our revenue and our adjusted EBITDA on a year-to-year basis. Our Q3 non-IFRS revenues were $15.5 million, a 68% increase over our Q3 2015 results of $9.3 million. Our IFRS revenue for the quarter was $20.7 million, a 37% increase over the $15 million we reported in the same period last year. Similarly, the company's non-IFRS adjusted EBITDA was positive $4.7 million in the quarter. That compared to a loss of $4.3 million last year, which was a $9 million improvement on a year-to-year basis from just in Q3 alone. I think an important contributor to these results comes from the strong growth that we've seen in revenues in our Earth observation business, which grew about 130% quarter over quarter. And that our revenue in EO has gone from around $1 million in Q1 into $3 million in Q2, and now just slightly over $7 million. This is a really good sign for us on the EO side and helping us really achieve the positive results in our quarterly basis. Turn it back over to Wade now.
Okay, so I think with that, moderator, we'll open this up for questions.
Thank you. We'll now take questions from the telephone lines. If you have a question and you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If at any time you wish to cancel the question, you may press the pound sign. Please press star 1 at this time. If you have a question, there will be a brief pause while the participants register for questions. Thank you for your patience. The first question is from Eyal Ophir from Dundee Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Thanks for taking my questions. Just wanted to jump in, I guess, into the data ramp here. So we see $7 million bucks in revenue from the Earth observation side. Can you just talk to, considering the fact that it's more challenging here to sell the MRC-HRC data, and you're more reliant on DAMIS 2 and DAMIS 1, what should we think? How should we think about the revenue ramp and the revenue opportunity for those two satellites?
Yeah, let me turn this over to Jeff Yell.
Hey, Yell, it's Jeff Rath. I'm going to do my best Fabrizio imitation. Fabrizio is on a plane, and so he would be the more qualified. But I think the question about the outlook, there's a couple of key points that Wade touched on one of them. The write-down is really an accounting non-cash item, and so I think that those cameras work, and they're generating revenue. There's a very clear path for that to continue for us. But I think there's uncertainty, and I think that's the point we're trying to make. And I do think we're increasingly actually seeing that we're winning proposals on multiple levels, but with multiple sensors. And so to the customer, it's increasingly not significant as to which sensor. And it's really about us delivering a unique offering, and that's really where the Pangeo Alliance is becoming a very unique offering. We are positioning ourselves as, solving the customer's problems. And so I think it's going to be harder and harder for us, frankly, to see the difference. And I don't think we're really going to get into the sensor by sensor, financial discussions here. So I think the points are that the asset write-down is really more about increased uncertainty, but at the same time, we're seeing a very strong pull from the customers, and we think this is going to continue. So we feel good about the business, and we feel on a consolidated basis, and I don't know if it's answering your question, but...
No, that's fine. And the other thing, comment I would say is, considering that Donald Trump was just elected president, you imagine the U.S. Relationship is going to improve with Russia. And if your partners there are actually looking to renegotiate the contract with you, is there a possibility here that, the turnaround times in terms of access to the data improves and allows you to kind of scale that revenue as well?
Yeah, hey, y'all. It's a good question, and I have really no idea, to be honest. I think the macro geopolitical context, which has affected us at our little micro level, These are big kind of turning wheels, and you know, kind of handicapping when, if, how that would play out, I think is a really, really long shot guess, to be honest.
Okay. And then just moving on to some of the constellations, before I pass the line, obviously the Earth Daily seems to be more near-term than the Optisar in terms of the actual build and launch. Can you just guide us through kind of what's the next steps, what kind of milestones we need to see from you guys? And, you know, it sounds like it's also going to be fully funded from I guess, the clients that you guys are speaking to. How should we think about, I guess, requirements going forward on that side, too?
Go ahead, Jeff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's Jeff again. Again, there's lots of activity, and if you're picking up increased confidence level, I think that's right. I think we absolutely have an increasing confidence, and I think that's a direct reflection on the customer level engagement. And so, I don't think we're going to share too much more than that, other than, you know, these types of systems get built because the customers need and want them. And so it really, we see this as a partnership with these customers. They want it. We are uniquely positioned for Earth Daily, and I think we're excited. And I think that, you know, the financing package is a key element to secure in order to bring this forward. But I think if we could leave you with a few thoughts, it's absolutely super encouraging. There's lots of interest here, and the customers really want this. And maybe one other data point that is a little bit subtle I'll make here is today there's only two commercial image systems that provide medium resolution sensors, data. There's RapidEye, which we know very well, and then there's Deimos 1, which we also know very well, own and operate. And when you think of the time it takes, typically 2 years, for a system to build, the industry is at an interesting point because there is no real continuity mission being tabled. So that creates a really interesting dynamic where some large customers need this a solution, and they're actually facing the possibility, if they don't work to get one, that they might have a supply problem. So these are some of the reasons why we're really optimistic and why we think there's a strong customer demand for this solution. So, you know, we're working hard to bring this to market, and when we have the, you know, everything in place, I think we'd look forward to sharing that with everyone.
Okay, great. And just one last one for me, and I'll pass the line. Just on the Optisar, can you just speak to the outside of the three MOUs that you have, how much more interest is there today, and how should we think about that as well, kind of from a conversion standpoint? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, y'all. Yeah, there are multiple other discussions underway with prospective customers around the world and in North America. And so that's a very robust funnel. You know, this is a hard program, complex. It's because we're trying to sell a condominium where lots of people have to buy into the condos before you can build a full building. And there's kind of ebbs and flows in that whole process, which I think you've probably observed at certain points. But we are at a point right now where we're seeing increasing momentum and you know, kind of a real maturation of that process on a variety of fronts. And we're very excited about it.
Okay, great. Thanks. I'll pass the line. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you. The next question is from Noel Atkinson from Kyra Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. First off, I was wondering if I could ask about operating costs. So you folks really did a nice job in reducing your operating expenses in the quarter from the June quarter. I was wondering if you could give us some sense of whether, you know, the overhead costs at the corporate level are stable from here, or you have to hire some more, or whether there's even more cost savings that are yet to be completed.
Hi, Noel. It's Issa. We did do quite a job over the first 6 months of reducing our operating costs, and probably have a bit more to go on that, but it's more in the context of refining things as we move forward. So I wouldn't look for that slope to continue at this point in time, but we're doing a good job there.
Okay, great. Secondly, on Optisar, so you mentioned that you're now in active contract negotiations on the three MOUs. Would you say that that the negotiations have progressed from the end of June to now?
I would say massively.
And then thirdly, on Earth Daily, could you give us some sense of the scale of the dollar value of contracts that you folks are pursuing?
Oh, how do I answer that? So I think there's maybe a, I don't want to be cute, but obviously we can't betray things either, Noel, so don't take it anything other than that. I think there's a really robust business case here that the customers have actually shown us, and were working with us to refine. And I think one of the more exciting things is this capability will, without a doubt in our minds, expand the overall market dramatically. So I think there's a lot of sort of opportunities. How do I say that? The challenge that everyone has that wants this, including the customers, is that they're going to have to help us finance this. And so I think our near-term goal is to try and create an environment that makes sense for those partners and for us. So it's not so much about, you know, getting every pound of flesh that we can, because that doesn't make any sense. It's really about helping us, or helping, you know, working together with our partners to bring this to market. So we are focused on that right now. I think there'll be and I think that's a different problem, maybe than, say, you know, winning the biggest contract out of the gate. Does that make any sense?
Sure. Just a quick follow-up. Do you have any contracts that are signed either pending, you know, completion of other, you know, a critical amount of contracts, or that, you know, you've got a firm contract signed for Earth Daily?
Yeah, so, I mean, we have obligations. If we have material news contracts on any parts of our business, I mean, we have to make that known. So I think you have to conclude that we're not sitting on any big, you know, contracts in that regard. But I don't think you should take away that we're not in negotiations for contracts. So if we take our obligations seriously on disclosure, and if we have something here on Optisar or Earth Daily, we will announce it. And I think right now that's probably all we can say.
Okay, and then just one quick final one. How much cash is still expected to come in from the $65 million engineering contract?
I think on that there's around roughly $40 million of the $65 million still to come in on that contract.
And that's U.S. dollars.
And that's U.S. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Okay. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from Stephen Lee from Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Wade, on your reaffirmed guidance. So at the midpoint, it would imply revenues to be up sequentially in Q4 to about $20 million. But then at the midpoint, EBITDA would be down sequentially to about $1 million. Am I missing something here, or maybe you are tracking ahead of plan on your EBITDA guidance?
Yeah, so Stephen, it's a very good question, and I think, unfortunately, the answer is not going to satisfy you. We this is the first year of our operations of the business, and we really are learning the business as we go a bit. And so, we at this point, we just don't want to get into the sort of quarter on quarter guidance. And so I think the message that we would like people to take away is we feel really good about our guidance. And if we feel that we're going to miss it or beat it, we actually have an obligation to share that with the market. And so that's the key message. But if your second question really is there something wrong with our business? The answer is no. There's nothing wrong with our business.
Okay.
And so we feel good about it, and we're working hard to grow it.
Great. And maybe a question for Isa. On your cash position, I saw your unbilled and receivable went up quite a bit. When do you expect those to convert into cash, and what are the milestones that need to happen? Thank you.
Answer the question.
Okay. Thanks, Stephen. On that, as you know, that contract we have on the engineering services side is quite lumpy. So when we hit a payment milestone, we get to bill quite a large amount, and the reason that it does build is that we're recognizing revenue on a straight line basis, and then we get to bill and then collect that in cash. So I am working on getting that smoothed out through operating lines of credit and being able to finance that from a strictly working capital perspective. But we expect that, as I said to Noel, there's about $40 million U.S. still coming in, and that's forecasted to be collected between now and June of 2018, but it is very lumpy within that time period.
Is there a payment milestone coming up next quarter?
Yeah, so the milestones come quite frequently on a random basis, Stephen, type thing. So we...
Okay, and then my last question is on Optisol. Wade, you mentioned RCM in your press release. Can you elaborate a little bit more? What is the Canadian government looking for, and how EarthCAS is positioned? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Stephen. Yeah, I mean, it's no news to anyone that the Canadian government has longstanding requirements for SAR data continuity. The original requirement for the RITISAT Constellation mission actually specified 6 satellites, but they had at the time only a demand for 3, and so that's the 3 that they have procured and are building and which will launch soon. But what we're seeing now is more and more evidence that they are starting to think about what comes next. And in that context, we have been speaking to the government. It's become clear that the government is increasingly interested in alternative and more perhaps flexible or service delivery models, as opposed to just the capital asset procurement model that historically has been the case. And what we've seen, I think, to be very honest, is a high degree of interest in our technology. And the technology and the IP that we have developed is the world's best, very much so. And we're demonstrating that now with customers directly, more and more showing what we've built there. And so I think, we're an awful long way here from a contract, and this will be a competitive environment, clearly. But I think it's a very, very interesting market. Potential for us.
That's great. Thank you, Wade.
Thank you. The next question is from Doug Taylor from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good evening. I'm going to ask some of Stephen's questions maybe in another way. Last year, around this time, I think you said you expected some sequential decrease in the Earth observation revenues, sort of a seasonality phenomenon. Do you expect that same thing, or do you expect to outgrow that with the Deimos sensors this time around this year? Or is it the engineering services piece of the business that's causing you to guide your revenue up sequentially? Any color there?
Yeah, I mean, Doug, you've actually answered the question in a way for us. And so I think everything you've said is kind of why we really don't feel that we're in a position to really comfortably get into quarterly guidance, because you've got a bunch of things going on, and you summarize them better than we could. You've got some seasonality, which is absolutely the case, particularly with Deimos 1 and MRC, but then you've got a very strong ramp in some of our VHR, and then you've got all the accounting requirements of when do you book it, when do you take it in. And so all of that is really a real baseline as to why at this point, and given that we're the first year of operation with some of these sensors. So you've just answered the question in a way. We just feel that, we hope that we get to a point where we can start to, give much more specific quarterly numbers. But at this point, we feel that is prudent is just to reiterate guidance and then, go from there.
Okay. I appreciate the more consistent positive EBITDA generation that you guys have shown. I think investors would like some more color on how and when we can expect that to translate into more consistent cash flow. And I realize that's a bit of a working capital question, but is there any color or comfort you can give us around, you know, when you expect to see that on a consistent basis?
Yeah, hi, Doug, it's Isa. I think actually you can certainly see on the Earth observation side the ramp up of the revenue there, and that one is a very much, you know, typical invoice and collect in a normal billing cycle. So that growth will start as it's achieved and maintained, continues to grow. You'll see the cash flows mirror that on obviously a lag basis. So I think you can see that that cash flows will start being much more regular coming in from the Earth observation side of the business. Going back to Stephen also's question and Noel's, I mean, we are expecting about $40 million U.S. of cash flow, of cash proceeds coming in off of that large contract. And those are lumpy, but, you know, we'll have quarters where we'll collect two or three payment milestones, and we'll have quarters that are zero. And that's just the nature of that contract. But that's why if we get those operating lines credited in, it'll smooth all that out for you, and you'll start seeing better consistency on our cash flow.
Okay, last question for me. Can you just walk through the range of outcomes with this renegotiation for these ISS sensors to the extent you're able to? Is there a scenario where you guys would just walk away from those at all or shut them down? Or can you help me think about that?
You know, Doug, thanks. We are looking at everything, and I want to give you a sense that that could be, you know, a creative ongoing partnership. It could involve licensing. It could involve a JV. It could involve an asset sale. It could involve basically anything. But they still work. They're still part of our offering. We still have some customer demand, and you know, I think we all knew this was something that we felt was coming. We probably saw it coming in some ways, but I think at this stage, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be.
And maybe if I could jump in there, Doug, and give us some context, and I think this is a fair question, I think as well, which is how does a bad outcome here impact our business going forward? And I think the message here is that the strength of our EO business is no longer dependent on the ISS sensors. So the way we'd like to phrase it, if the worst case happens, and we don't even know what that is, we feel we can absolutely grow this business for many years. And one of the sources of that is just our current offering, and the other thing is the Pangeo offering. This is essentially the world's first virtual constellation, and this has the ability for us to bid for bigger contracts, lower margin, and so there's a bit of a revenue mix there. But I think the point that we'd like to make is that in many ways the revenue opportunities in front of us dwarf, you know, certainly what we were doing on the ISS sensor. So We feel good that we were hopeful of a positive outcome, and there's certainly scenarios there. But if something doesn't go well here, this we feel really good that we can grow our EO data revenues for a long time to come quite strongly.
I guess the one follow-up to that then would be, I mean, assuming, you know, the worst, and no reason to expect that. Is there a bunch of costs you're carrying to run those sensors that, you know might roll off if you were to cut bait and run from that?
Doug, as he said, those costs aren't really material. The operations as be absorbed into our EO operations business. So the growth from the other sensors will just consume that.
And even more specifically, I mean, I think it's clear here that the revenue ramp for those sensors really were slower and not what we had hoped and expected. And we took action a while back to de-risk the cost side of that. And I think that's part of the sort of the sequential cost savings you're seeing through the model here. So I think there was increasing uncertainty there, and instead of, you know, sort of hoping, we feel that we mitigated a bunch of that revenue and cost risks, a while back.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Noel Atkinson from Clarus Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my follow-up. Your corporate presentation online talks about a 200 million euros and more of sales funnel for EO. Would that all relate just to the Deimos, like your existing sensors and the Pangeo Alliance?
Hey, Noel. That number is larger now than what it says on the deck, point number one. Point number two, it overwhelmingly relates to Deimos 2 and Deimos 1, but it does also include some of the other the assets, including a little bit on HRC and MRC, and, of course, then, as we've been saying, the Pangeo Alliance partners. So it's really the full mix. But you should think that the majority of that is, in fact, Deimos 2 and Deimos 1.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, you may press star one if you have a question. The next question is from Eyal Ophir from Dundee Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just to actually follow up on that, in your presentation, you also discussed a number of countries that you've signed agreements with in terms of new wins. I'm assuming that some of these have not probably contributed into the third quarter. Is that a safe assumption and that those are still ramping?
Yeah, but let me qualify it a bit. Yeah, thanks for the question. You know, this business does have a bunch of elements to it. Some of the contracts are simply, you execute them and you book the revenue. Some are framework contracts that are more nuanced as far as it allows them to order. Some of them actually are contracts that, you know, have some seasonality built into it. So I don't think we want to mislead you here. The answer is absolutely. We have contracts that we've won that did not contribute to revenue this quarter, absolutely, and we think that's a good thing and it's going to continue. But I don't think we're also saying that this is just a linear exercise here where revenue will just grow for every quarter consistently. I think that's one of the elements that we're watching and learning, and that's probably the best way we can describe it.
Okay, that's fair. And then just on the 200 plus million euro sales funnel, this is term only for EO observation, just to confirm. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That doesn't include the Earth Daily stuff. And then said last one, just in terms of the reverse RFP you guys did in the States, and obviously you're entering some contract negotiations now. How should we think about that from, how long would that take to select the final partner, I should say? And then once that occurs, how should we think about you guys entering the market with that partner into the U.S. government?
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit dependent on how these partnership discussions develop. Just to clarify, they're not contracts. These are partnership discussions with U.S. companies. I think depending on the type of company, those discussions could take a variety of different directions. I think in terms of timelines, you should be thinking that this is in the time frame of months in terms of having impact on us. Certainly not faster than that. And what we're looking for, again, just to remind you, we're looking for long term partners that can kind of bridge us into, customers and to, contract opportunities that we as a, as a Canadian company and as a very commercially focused company really can't get at ourselves. So you should really think of these as more of a building block of longer-term process as opposed to some kind of near-term impact thing.
The other thing, Al, it's Jeff here, if I could just comment. I think we all, and we fall victim of this as well, we kind of generalize sometimes things too much, that the U.S. government is somehow just one customer. It's just one sales channel. So interesting, Yael. I mean, we're winning contracts effectively where the end customer is, quote, the U.S. government now. And there's just different ways to see that demand. We can come through some of our partners, and then we can also, you know, and we do have a direct relationship. So I think just to remind everyone, it's more than one customer. It's a multi-channel discussion, and I don't think anyone should be left with the impression that this is the only path to that opportunity. We're seeing demand, and we know where the end customer is, and that's actually showing up already.
Okay. So is there also a scenario where you sign up with more than one partner, so they can go into two different parts of the government?
Yes, there is absolutely a scenario to do that.
Okay. Perfect. Thanks. I'll pass the line.
Thank you, Donna, for the questions registered at this time. I would like to turn things back over to Mr. Larson.
Okay, well, thank you. We really appreciate your time, everybody, and we look forward to chatting with you in a few months.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.